Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're also archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about authenticity. And I don't know about where you are because this is a global show, but in the United States, authenticity is kind of a big word. It's used like in networking. It's just kind of a generic thought, and nobody really thinks about, well, what does that mean, and how can I have it? Because, of course, that's what we want. We want to have authenticity so that people understand that we are genuinely fabulous, right? And of course we are. And we're wonderful leaders. And we do everything in an authentic and genuine manner. So let's talk about what that means. What does authentic leadership mean, right? What does it mean to say that? Because it can't just be a phrase. I mean, goodness sakes, we want to have more substance than that. What does authentic leadership really mean, right? Thank you. Yes, I think that we're going to call these core values. Let's talk about our core values. What makes us, well, what makes us us? And our, maybe our preconceptions too. And those are core values. They really are. And sometimes they are core values that are not widely held, right? And that's all right too, as long as we understand that that's our core value and that we understand that not everyone perhaps adheres to it because it's not their core value. Ooh, what a concept, eh? Being genuine and being authentic leads to, indeed, consensus building. A lot of you are talking about consensus building. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. I can see we're going to have a real nice group. Hello. Yeah, authentic leadership does have to do with civility. I'll give it that. That you have to really have a civil and respectful atmosphere, right? Yes. And yes, if we have good, strong core values, then we can indeed model enthusiasm because we feel enthusiastic about the outcome. We feel enthusiastic about what's happening. We feel like, yes, this is going to work out, and we're going to have consensus, and we're going to have team building, and it's going to be just fine. Thank you very much. Right. And, yes, core values, genuineness, authenticity, they all lead to and are part of empathy. Because how are you going to deal with other people, right? Yeah. And how are you going to help them to understand your core values and for you to understand their core values, right? Yes. So we want to be able to have empathy, and remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Very important to understand that, because it's, people think, oh, empathy, I agree with you. Not necessarily. But let's find some common ground. Let's consensus build. So what are your core, let's do core values first. I don't want to do this. Yes, my computer is talking to me. I'm just going to push OK for that. I hope that was all right. Yes, I get, this is true. talk to you guys, don't I? And it is a live show, and so sometimes things show up on my computer screen, and I'm like, what on earth is that? And I'm like, I want to do that. And yeah, it would often ask me if it would like to restart. And I'm like, no, I'm in the middle of a program. I don't want to restart. Hello. So core values, back to the show. Core values, what are they so that we can have authentic leadership? And we have to decide, we don't have to announce this to people because, well, your core values are flexible, right? They kind of change as you age and have experience too. They may remain at their core the same, but they do get modified somewhat with your life experiences, right? Yeah. And it is, which means that even people that you have dealt with before, if it's been a little while, or these are really different issues, we're going to have to talk to each other again, right? Yeah, we're going to have to think about this. Mm-hmm. So what are your core values as a leader? People are talking about morality. And yes, your core values, your authenticity, your authentic leadership core values do indeed have to do with your moral values, with your sense of what is right as opposed to what's not right, right? Yeah, your sense of this is what should be done. This is what would be a good outcome. This is what good people do, right? Yeah, so that's your moral core values. I suppose this is actually true, and it's a good way of looking at it. A lot of people are saying, and thank you all for being here, that your core values are really your comfort zone. And your comfort zone, which is kind of an Americanism, but your comfort zone is what you are comfortable doing, which is often how it's always been done, right? You feel comfortable doing it in this manner because, well, you've seen it done, and it's always worked before, and there's no reason to think it won't work now, and, yeah, this is good, right? Yeah. And so your core values and your comfort zone are often aligned. I don't know if they're exactly the same because your core values may go deeper than how it's always been done, because core values, your real moral core values, are not only how it's always been done, which is your comfort zone, but how it should be done, right? Even if that's not true now, how it should be done. How it would be better if it was done in this way because it would be a more genuine outcome, something that you truly think would be a better idea, right? Yeah. So your core values and your comfort zone may align. In certain spots, they certainly do. But if your comfort zone is how it's always been done, which is how we usually define it, sometimes you want something that has not been done before, but would be a good thing according to your real authentic leadership, your real genuine thoughts, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. Muhammad and others saying that your core values change over your life, but the core remains. Your core values change over your life, but the core remains. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a certain flexibility. This is a good point, too. Lee and others are saying that they don't so much change as you start out with a series. Everybody does this. You learn it from childhood, really. We all start out with a series of ideas of how the world is, how it should work. And then as we gain more experience in the world, we gain some flexibility because we get more tolerance, hopefully, for the core values of others. Yeah, you need tolerance. That tolerance for the core values of others should be one of your core values as a leader. Because how are you going to have empathy? How are you going to lead properly if you don't have tolerance for other people? Yeah. So tolerance is a core value that you impart to other people's core values. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, of course, we're going to be capable of building consensus, because that's really important. We're going to build consensus. We're going to have the ability to really work forward. We're going to have the ability to really look at what we've got in common, look at what we can gain in common, and go forward, right? Yeah. So consensus building is a biggie. Yes. Yes, thank you. Yes, Margaret and others are talking about consensus being a workable plan to go into the future with. Yes, you don't have, we announced this at the beginning of the program. You don't have to be friends. You don't. You don't have to even like each other. But we're going to reach consensus on what to do about the issues we're faced with. And we're going to go forward with a workable plan. One of the things I really don't like hearing, and groups do this, and I'm like, oh, especially governments and things do this, and I'm like, oh, that's not good, because there's no plan in place. We're not going forward. I don't like the expression, agree in principle. Ever hear that? Yeah, agree in principle. It means that we couldn't reach any kind of a decent idea of what to do, so we just agreed in principle that we should try to find a decent idea of what to do. Ah, gee willikers, not on my watch. As leaders, as authentic leaders, we want to be able to get our people to a point where they've got a workable plan, something they can really do, something that's got step by step, something that's going forward. And when it goes forward, we're going to see about the repercussions, and then we're going to modify, right? Yeah, it's not that it's set in stone, but it is something that we can work on together and go forward with, and not something that's just, oh, an idea that would be good. No! What good is that? We want to really, really do something that is useful, that we can really, really wrap our head around, that we can really, really go forward with. Right? Right. Yes. This is true, too. People are asking how to build consensus. Well, we're going to talk about empathy in a little while on this show. And that's understanding, not necessarily agreement. In fact, everything we're going to be talking about is ideas for how to build consensus, because they lead to consensus, because really consensus is just the making of a team and agreeing to work together on a workable plan, right? It's agreement as to what to do to go forward is what all consensus is. It's just a fancy word for it, really. Another way that I think is good for building consensus, I like to call in some experts along the line. You know, we call them in for sure at the end to make sure we're not going to have any unintended consequences, which is the other phrase I hate. I really hate it when we have unintended consequences because we didn't think about something, some sort of repercussion that we should have thought about, but we didn't know we were supposed to think about. Unintended consequences. Oh, darn it. Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, that's not good. No. So we try not to have those. And one of the ways to do that is to bring in some experts. Experts are also greatly consensus building. Sometimes you have participants, or you have participants and someone else who is important to the process. Even your opposition or employers sometimes are not on board very well. And in this show, we call everybody, employer is a generic term, we call everybody who had the brains to bring us in as leader, we call them employers, right? It does not necessarily indicate an employment relationship. We use the word employer for whoever it is that we kind of report to. I say kind of because sometimes it's an actual physical, definite, do every 6 weeks report. And sometimes it's more of a casual. But whoever it is that brought us in and is taking an interest is the employer. That's a generic term on this show. It does not indicate an employment relationship necessarily. It might. So the employer might need to get in on the consensus, right? And sometimes what we decide as a group, what we decide and we reach consensus on, is somewhat different than what we started out as the thought of what we're going to do. That happens. Sometimes it's kind of different. And that's oftentimes a little shocking to someone like the employer or the media, right? Media creates public opinion. Never forget the media because they are important to us. The public decides what they think because of what the media tells them. The public might even be the employer. Hang on, I'm going to take a sip of water. Pardon me. Pardon me, though. My goodness. Hello. So it's important to reach the consensus and if everybody be on board. Experts are good in helping with this. Sometimes you have differences of opinion that are sincere. And we need to get some experts in to tell us what the different repercussions are going to be. If we do this, what will happen? If we do that, what will happen? Sometimes, and this is a negotiation trick that I have learned over the years, sometimes I bring in an expert that will be unappealing to everyone because I want them to agree that they hate the expert. Isn't that funny? That's a step towards consensus building. We've agreed on something. We've agreed that the expert's an idiot. Well, look, we've already agreed on something, which makes us feel more like a team, which makes us feel more warmly together, which makes us have thoughts that are more similar. And why is the expert an idiot? Well, maybe we can agree on how come, which will lead us to the consensus of what to do. So you have to think about these things. Sometimes the purpose of the expert is to shake us up and to make us understand that we're going to need to go forward together despite what that expert says. Yeah. So sometimes I pick someone who's truly not so end up going to be so good at this because I want us to not follow him as a consensus-building tool. Yeah, I know. Kind of strange. People are asking who to choose as an expert. Okay, I personally, and this is from experience over the years, and I've been doing this a lot of years, I personally like someone with boots-on-the-ground experience. I like someone who's done it. I like someone who's had a successful outcome in similar facts. I even think an excellent expert is someone who failed, who can tell us how come they failed, and has an idea of what to do now, because it keeps us from just churning our wheels and doing whatever it is that they did that caused it to fail. A lot of times people have been in a group, and for one reason or another, it didn't reach a successful outcome. Or for one reason or another, they pushed for change, and it didn't work. Sometimes, and if you think back on this, this is true, sometimes change needs a moment to catch up with society. Does that make sense? Yeah, we can argue many things that are like that. In the United States, over my lifetime, and I'm not that old, people, but within the last, well, since I was a child, but in the last 50 years, but less than that, even, there have been a lot of societal shifts that have allowed laws and different ideas to percolate that would have been against the core values of many people in society before then, the generation before. Does that make sense? And they are still somewhat controversial, but the laws have passed because the majority, democracy, right? Because the majority of voters, the majority of people in power in government who respond to what they think the voters want them to do, have instituted change. Yeah. People are asking for an example. Well, whether I don't care what you think about this. This is just a statement of fact. In the United, so don't argue about it. But in the United States, homosexual marriage is now legal. Legal. As in, you get full benefits and I could have a wife, right? Now, I don't care what you think about that. That's just, when I think about it, that is a statement of fact. I went to the Supreme Court, and it is law in our land that it is legal for same-sex couples to marry and get full marriage benefits. It is not that long ago, and may be true in the societies where you are, because this is a global show, that never mind marriage, but that homosexuality was illegal. And you could get arrested for it. And you couldn't openly say that you were, and like that. And so that's a core value. What you think about that is kind of a morals issue-ish. And people's opinions of tolerance for others and flexibility has shifted, right? Yeah. It's a biggie because it went from being the act itself was illegal. You couldn't practice openly to being I can get married to my same-sex partner. Wow. Yes, I will tell you that the main thing I think about it is that, you know, I'm an attorney, is I think it's a wonderful boon for attorneys because it's an entire new segment of society that's going to get divorced. And I'm sorry, that was rude, but I don't do divorce law, so it's kind of like, oh, that's nice. But anyway, so things change. And it is core values change, consensus changes, ideas change, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, now people have asked about experts. What do you think an expert is? I like experts who have had experience, who have had failure, and maybe now, just like this thing with the gay marriage, maybe now the time has come for something that failed before. So they're still good experts, and they're still interested in helping. Mm-hmm. Now, so I don't care about your credentials in that sense. I care about your real-life credentials. But the media, employers, and like that, oftentimes are impressed by actual paper credentials, as in I have a degree in that, right? Yeah, that's a big difference. The big difference is that you might have two sets of experts. You might have experts that really have done it and experts who are academics. And they may agree with each other as far as that goes. I also like, especially towards the end when we're about to implement or about to, we're thinking about actual action, I like to have competing experts. I don't pick someone who agrees with my side. I like to pick someone who probably doesn't agree with my side, and maybe even someone who does, and have them kind of duke it out, have them kind of give their reasoning all the way around so that we can really decide and really hear all aspects and not just one component of it, right? Yeah, and I think that that's really important. I think it's really important to have all kinds of people tell you things so that when you really implement, when you get your workable plan and you're really doing it, you don't have an oh my God moment. We have, I don't know, depends what it is you're doing, but we've violated someone's rights. We've caused some sort of trauma. I like an expert to actually, if we're changing the law and we're putting some sort of recommendation in place, which we do a lot, I actually like even an internal regulation for a corporation. I do those too a lot. They're multinationals and they want to change or modify some sort of agreement that's been made. Before it's presented to the people who are going to be impacted or the people who are going to implement it, I like to have a third-party impartial read it and tell me what it says. Because sometimes you get too close to a thing. Sometimes you've worked too hard on it, you've seen it too much, and you know what it says. But to an outside reading it the first time, that's not what it means. And you go, oh, like that, yes. Yes, I will tell a story on myself. Recipe for Peace Now, the first book, which is a while back by now, about a decade we've been in business, maybe more than that. Getting old. The first book, which is called Recipe for Peace Now, a lot of you have it, thank you. Yes, you like it. But we did not have an expert look at it before it went on the market. It wasn't expertly edited. Didn't know I was supposed to. And it sells very well. People love it. But I have noticed from the email and the comments that I accidentally wrote a cookbook because it has recipes. And the thing that people like about it the best are the recipes. And the recipes were an adjunct to the information to help you negotiate, to talk about something you weren't going to be pissed off about, that kind of thing. So it wasn't meant that way, but that's how it turned out. And if I had had someone look at it first, before it went on the market, before it was published, I might have done it differently, right? Or we might have put out a Recipe for Peace Now cookbook. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. But we would have split it, so to speak. Yeah. Yes, thank you. You all have your favorite recipe. This is true. It's very well received, but it's kind of well received as a cookbook. Yeah, it's kind of strange that way. Yeah, so it really depends. You should have something looked at by an outsider first. Yeah, that's my example of, whoops. It wasn't a big whoops because people like it, and they do look at the other stuff, but it's like, oh, I didn't mean to write a cookbook, but there we have it. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about core values. We've talked about reaching consensus. Let's talk about the civility rules. Yes? Now, we always have quite a few new people, as well as all of you who have been here before. Welcome to everyone. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now has. And at their core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. Very important. Mm-hmm. Because we want to make a convivial atmosphere. We want to make an atmosphere of respect. I announce that the civility rules are in force, which they are for everything that we ever do. I announce the civility rules whenever I make a new group, whenever we get together, whenever we are first meeting. Because even if I think that this group will be fine, and they're really, really kind of in agreement, it's just a question of what to do about it. Sorry. Took a sip of water there. Pardon me. But you need to announce them because you want to be able to enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. There may be somebody who even kind of challenges the civility rules because they're a bully. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. These are very important words because once you lose control and the whole thing goes uncivil, it's hard to get it back. Once you lose control and things go uncivil, it is hard to enforce the civility rules. It's hard to get them back, is what it really is. Yes, it is very, very important to be able to have the civility rules and be able to say, this is what we're doing. This is what we're going to be, how we're going to act towards each other. Because you need a respectful and convivial atmosphere. Yes, thank you. Folks are asking how to enforce. First of all, they're asking whether they need to be more detailed. The answer is they are deliberately not more detailed because you do that as you stand there. That's part of your genuineness, your authenticity as a leader. You have the capacity to see if this is, maybe in other circumstances it wouldn't be uncivil, but it is now. It is here. You understand because you would never do this as a human because you are a model of civility. You understand tone of voice. You understand body language. You understand, I see this in court a lot. This is what happens in court a lot. Somebody, you know, there's court reporters. So it is taken down by a person typing, essentially speaking. Nowadays, sometimes it's recorded, which makes a difference. It's videotaped. There's still such a thing as a court reporter, but nowadays the videotape is even better. I usually use a videotape. Some courts don't allow it, though, so there's still such a thing as a court reporter. And people say something that in and of itself seems fine and seems fine on paper. It's not rude. It's not condescending. It's not, it's fine. The sentence is fine. But in real life, it was uncivil because of the tone of voice, the way it was said, the body language, and the context, right? Yes. So it seems good, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly. Because if you let stuff like that happen, if you let stuff like that really percolate, if you let the group kind of slide into incivility, you'll have trouble getting it back. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, are a model of civility. You cannot ask people to do something that you do not practice. If you are uncivil, whole thing going to fall apart. Because your authentic self is not uncivil. Not. No. Your authentic self understands how to go forward and how to deal with people. Mm-hmm. Speaking of dealing with people are asking how to enforce this. It's a perfectly good question. Because just words is nice, but so what? I can say you're being uncivil, but they know they're being uncivil. So it's not an effective thought, right? Yeah. So we want to, before we even start being the leader, I get this done. Before I start being the leader, I talk to the employer, remember, it's a generic term. And I ask for power. I ask for teeth, so to speak, right? Because I can say that is uncivil and we do not act in that manner. But if you've got a real bully on your hands or you've got somebody who has an agenda of failure for the group, right? The response to that is going to be, what you going to do about it? Yeah, what you going to do about it? And you have to have an answer. And the answer is not, I'm going to say or think that you are not a good person. They don't care. If they were good people with good core values and authentic selves, they wouldn't be so obnoxious, right? No, you have to have a real answer to what you're going to do about it. That real answer comes from the employer. I want to be able to impact their ability to be in this group, their impact to make a living. Now, sometimes you're not dealing with employment situations. You are dealing with other kinds of groups. Same thing. You impact their ability to be in the group, right? Yeah. To be replaced. To be dishonored, right? You have to have an answer to what you're going to do about it, and it has to be a good one, or they won't do it. I suppose I did say this. People are asking about the phrase that I use, that they have an agenda for failure. And they wanted to know how that can possibly be if somebody's in a group, a participant. The answer is kind of multifold. And I see this a lot because I do a lot of corporate. I do big organizations that are having, flexibility issues usually of some sort, or are dealing with the media in some way, or quite frankly, times have changed on them, and they need to go forward in a manner that is more in keeping with today's technology, right? Right. And a lot of if I have a specialty, and I don't know that I do, I am called into groups to lead them with as my authentic self. I am called into groups that have already failed. They've reached a complete impasse. They have failed. They're not even talking to each other anymore, basically. And I need to turn that around because they need to reach a workable agreement and go forward, or this entire sector of the organization is not going to be able to go forward. There's something big about it, right? And they need to be there. But that means oftentimes that I come into a situation, I announce that I'm the new sheriff in town and like that, but I need some good repercussions for lack of sincere team building, lack of sincere participation, because oftentimes I have the prior leader, the one who failed, and his or her friends still in my group. So they have an agenda of failure because they don't want me to come in, ha-ha, Sue is here, and take over and be successful. So they're going to try to sabotage, right? Yes. And that's why we need the employer backing. Sometimes all it takes is the employer coming and sitting in on a few of these. Well, let's see. I think that's kind of a good thing, right? Because the employer needs to understand what to do, and they need to back you. I get it in writing, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. we also talking about modeling civility, yes, being a model of civility. You cannot ask people to do something that you don't do. Yeah, I've seen that happen. I try very hard not to do it. It is also, is one of my core values is civility. I am kind of naturally civil. I don't easily get nasty to people, but some people do. Pardon me. They get kind of pompous is what they get. Yeah, this is true. But if you accidentally go uncivil, and you know it because it's something you would call out a participant for doing, I will assume that you have not done something so egregious that you need to recuse yourself and tell them to get a new leader. You haven't stomped out of the room. But you've done something less than gracious. Somebody pushed your buttons. It's been a bad day. And it kind of fell out. You kind of lost it for a second there. But not irreparably. I think you should apologize and use yourself as a bad example. People appreciate that. They understand that sometimes things are just, I didn't mean it. I apologize, right? And then you explain that you yourself have violated the civility rules. Sometimes I have a monetary fine that kicks in, right? If you are uncivil, you get charged. And it's kind of, it's not really a punishment for being uncivil. It's not really an action from the employer. Everybody know what a swear jar is? People used to do it. I had an aunt who had one. And every time somebody said a bad word, they had to put a dollar in a jar on her dining room table. And eventually the dollars accumulated, and she bought like a treat or something. It wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't a big fine. But it was kind of a fine, and it was kind of embarrassing to have to go do it. And then somebody got to be magnanimous, usually an adult male because we were all kids, and say, well, it's time to buy the swear word cake, because that's what she did with the money. She went down to the bakery and bought a fancy cake for everybody to share. And they would put in, I don't know, $10 or something, and make up the difference for the swear word cake because we all wanted the treat. And it was like, well, you know, there's only $4 in there, but I'm going to say something rude and put in a lot of money, and we're all going to go have a cake. In fact, they weren't allowed to actually say anything rude, but it was kind of funny. But you see what I mean? Sometimes minor incivility, you can do something fun like that, depending on the group. And then everybody gets a treat. You know, it's the group's money, so to speak. Nowadays, it's usually more than a dollar goes in. Usually not an amount that hurts, really. But I'm of the $10 variety. That's not nothing. And you kind of think about it, because $10 is $10. But it's not enough so that it really breaks somebody. So you have to say, I don't have that kind of money. Because if you make it $100, that's kind of a lot. But anyway, so you can do different things like that. But that's one of the ways to create civility in kind of a pleasant way and not have to call in the employer. Yes, get back to the people with an agenda for failure. They need to have real repercussions. The swear jar is not going to do it for them because they really have an agenda that if I couldn't do it, I failed, And I don't want someone else to come in and be able to successfully handle this when I failed miserably. You see that? That's human nature, folks. It really is. That's not even being evil-minded. That is just plain ordinary human nature. I don't want somebody to come in and be better than me. And this way I can say, well, even Sue could not get that handled, could not get that settled out. See that? Even Sue couldn't do it. Well, shit, if Sue couldn't do it, yeah, that kind of stuff. So, you also have to model genuine enthusiasm, which is our next topic. Oh, shoot, we're going to run out of time. my fault. I apologize. Model genuine enthusiasm. It really does have to be genuine. If you really think that this is a loser idea and these people are truly not going to make it because they're completely horrid and it's a stupid idea and it's a loser, you shouldn't take on the job. You really shouldn't. First of all, it's going to be aggravating to you. That's how people get stressed, because they're doing stuff that they don't believe in and they think is ridiculous. And that's bad for you. That's bad for your genuineness. It's bad for your authenticity. It's bad for your soul. I mean, it's bad for your core values. So don't take on stuff like that. If you can't be enthusiastic, if you can't say yes, I think we're going to make this. I think that we've got this. We're going forward. Then don't do it, because people are going to know, right? And if you get in the middle of it and you're like, oh, phooey, this is really not it, maybe you should recuse yourself. You should get somebody else to do it who is more attuned, who is more enthusiastic, who really has a belief that it's a good thing, right? Yeah. Because participants do know. Yes, the enthusiasm extends out to outside too, to everybody. And you might tell people what you're doing as long as it's not a secret. And like that, and get all enthusiastic about it too, right? Yeah. Yes, so it's important to model enthusiasm. We're going to have some empathy also, aren't we? Right? Because how are we going to be able to deal with these people? How are we going to be able to get to our successful outcome? How are we going to be able to act properly as an enthusiastic, authentic, and genuine leader if we don't know anything about each other, right? Because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yes. And that's a very important point, because it is important to know what people think, why this is their core value. We're going to break out the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? For example, who told you that? What exactly did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? Why do you think that? Right? Now, are we going to ask these questions all in that order? Not necessarily. That's a leadership call. Are we going to ask them in front of everybody? Not necessarily. Same thing, leadership call, right? But we are going to want to know the answers to these questions. We're going to couch them in a very civil manner, of course. But we want to know this stuff. And who do you need to know it from? Our participants, right? The people we're truly dealing with. How about our invisible participants? Yes. Recipe for Peace Now thinks about those folks. They are the ones that are taking an interest but are influencing our participants but don't want to be named, don't want to be known as helping, right? usually not for nefarious reason, usually because they are oftentimes employed in a position where they're supposed to back the status quo. They just don't think that it's all that good secretly, but they don't really want their name put out because, did you hear the word secretly in that? Yeah, and that's completely reasonable. It really is. Mm-hmm. You need to understand what it is that you're doing in order to go forward, right? And understand the other people. How about some empathy for the employer, right? What do they want? What do they think they want as opposed to what do they actually want? Sometimes it's different. Mm-hmm. Outsiders, right? I always put in self in this category too, because I think it's important to note that you should have understanding of yourself and of your preconceived notions and of your core values and what you think about this. Yeah, it's very important. Your self-understanding is maybe the most important of all, because then you understand how you're dealing with other people. Now, we're getting close to the time limit, and so I apologize. We're not going to make the recipes again. We'll get to them eventually. Honest to goodness, we have this quite a bit. I think last week we did a recipe. I should get a prize. But basically speaking, think about it this way. Leadership authenticity is genuineness, and it's really your reputation, right? That's it. It affects your reputation. If your reputation is no good because, I don't know, you're not genuine. You say something and then you do something else. You break your word, especially if somebody like the invisible participant says, I want to be anonymous, and then you tell everybody. Oof. You don't have follow-through. You don't model enthusiasm or civility. All these things go to your authenticity, they go to your leadership value, and they go to your reputation. And reputation is very, very, very important. Yes, because there's lots of folk who want to lead these groups, and you are chosen due to your reputation, your sterling reputation, for being a genuine, authentic, successful, effective leader. And you are. Mm-hmm. Yes, if you don't have very much experience, volunteer in the community. People are terribly impressed by that, for one thing. For another thing, you get lots of experience and make some connections. And also it's good. It's good for society. It's good for everything. So you want to volunteer in your community and get well known. And then people say, oh, I think Sue does that. Let's go ask her. And you're like, yes, of course I do. Yes, yes. And so it's very important to model civility always. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you. Thank you for, yes, the reputation part cannot be overstated. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.